This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's new movie, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. The Least of These, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for joining us again. What is the state of persecution against Christians across the world today? Well, Open Doors USA is now out with its 2019 World Watch List, revealing the increase in persecution of our brothers and sisters across the world, but also some disturbing facts about two of the most populous countries in the world. We're joined now by David Curry, President and CEO of Open Doors USA, and we're going to find out more. David, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Janet. I always appreciate being with you and your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you here. So this was very jarring to me when I saw the overall numbers involving persecuted Christians. We went from 215 million Christians experiencing high, very high, or extreme persecution last year to 245 million Christians now experiencing that level of persecution, an increase of 30 million Christians. Can you explain to people why those numbers are going up with such intensity? What's going on?
You're right. That is the story. You know, we've had North Korea at the top of the World Watch List for 18 years. People have come to know and expect that they're going to be right there at the top. But China and India together have about 164 million Christians there. And we've just seen a dramatic increase in the restrictions, rules, regulations, pressure on Christians in these areas. So maybe I could break them down quickly for you. China is using technology, facial recognition in churches. They're trying to implement pressure on theology of churches. They're doing all kinds of things, which has made the number of Christians living under high levels of persecution in China jump. India, and we can go deeper into either one of these, but India has 64 million Christians. They've had this massive pressure on them for the last 6 years because the government has a radical Hindu agenda. The BJP party, led by Prime Minister Modi, is pressuring Christians, trying to get rid of them. Their agenda is different than China. They have a nationalistic point of view, which says you're not really an Indian unless you're Hindu. Hmm. And these are some great citizens, and they're being pressured to drop their faith, and all kinds of problems are happening. Hundreds of attacks on churches this year in India.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when you're talking about China, I know this process of sinicization has been going on, and that is making, you know, Christianity more Chinese and in line with Chinese values. I know they're doing that to other religions as well. But I had heard a story recently, David, about some officers and, you know, a team of government officials going into a church and actually telling them they had to get rid of one of the Ten Commandments off their wall. And I thought, you know, you laugh, but you also cry, because that's how intense it's getting over there. And to what extent is the church bearing that? And how, what is the response from the church to this increased pressure?
Well, as crazy as those stories sound, a lot of them are based in fact. We had a church on December 10th of last year, just a few weeks ago, led by Pastor Wang Yi. Some people may have read this story. He was arrested. His wife was arrested. They were put into solitary confinement. And the charge essentially was that he has been speaking out against the government. What he said was he didn't want the Communist Party changing theology of the church. It was going to be about the teachings of Jesus and not their dogma. Now he's in jail, and so are 160 members of his church. So that kind of thing is happening in China. They are bearing the brunt of it. Of the estimated 100 million Christians, just about half of them are facing high levels of persecution. So it's not by any means total, but it is a big jump in the wrong direction, and we're concerned about it. Because, in particular, because they have this technological advantage, they shut down a church in Beijing in September because they refused to put cameras on their pulpit to watch their crowd.
Wow.
They're using facial recognition. They're banning anybody under the age of 18. The big fear, my sense, the big fear is that they know there are more Christians than members of the Chinese party, and they've got to force a change if they're going to hold on to power. But we want to see people have the freedom to read a Bible, decide what they think, if they want to go to church, if they want to send their kids to summer camp, these kinds of things. We'd like to have the freedom to do that.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that one pastor, and that's been in the news, but are there a lot of other pastors that are in similar circumstances, or are things ramping up so other pastors are in similar danger?
Absolutely. There are lots of other stories like this all over China, because this is a big issue for them. If they're going to maintain control, they sense they're going to have to find a way to control the spread of faith across China. It's been a benefit to them because they understand that there is no moral framework within their communist dogma, and they've got corruption problems, they've got drug problems, and here comes Christianity creating better citizens.
Hmm.
So they haven't wanted to clamp down up until now, in the last 15 years at least.
Yeah.
But now they're sensing a threat because they can't control it.
That's very disturbing. As is the story out of India, as you mentioned, that's more of a nationalism problem, and to be Indian is equated with being Hindu. But why is that suddenly exploding, David? What are the reasons that for so long, you had India all of a sudden pop up on your list and higher? And why? What happened in India to cause this change?
Well, the BJP party, the ruling party, has been around for decades. They never had any power. They would lose elections. They were a fringe group. And then all of a sudden, they found a very sophisticated leader in Prime Minister Modi, who says the right things. He lets his henchmen do the dirty work. He has spiritual leaders who make outrageous claims about Christians and say that we're going to get rid of them all by 2025, these kinds of things, and he keeps his distance. So they've seized power. That's not a fair statement. They have won elections in many of the key states, and they've used that power to both put pressure on Christians and to overlook when mob violence breaks out from the radical Hindu dogma, the language that they've been using at their rallies. Hundreds of churches have been attacked, lots of pastors arrested. They sort of look the other way at this vigilante justice. It's creating a really unusual situation.
Well, it is, and they also now are on the top 10, right? They first made it into the top 10 this year, not having been there before, India at number 10.
Yeah, and when you think about it, just to give people a sense of perspective, number 9 on the list is Iran,
yeah.
And number 11 is Syria. So we think India is one of our global partners, and I suppose in some ways they are, but they're certainly not on the same page as far as human rights, religious freedom. And if people don't have a religious background or a spiritual perspective, just think of it in these terms. If you don't have the right to decide for yourself what you believe, how free are you? And that's the issue here, that people have the right to wake up and go, I want to read a Bible, and I think I believe this. That should be something that's accepted in India, and for a long time has been accepted. So it's a shift brought about by a political agenda. They want to try to maintain power, and this is one way they can do it.
Right. What are the laws concerning religious liberty for Christians in India?
Well, like a lot of places, even in North Korea, they have a constitution that says that people have religious freedom. The practical part of it, as strange as that may sound, of course, there's no freedom in North Korea.
Right.
But likewise in India, they can say the right things in practice. But then they pass laws that say you can't change your faith, you can't change your registration, they limit work for people of certain faith, they overlook violence. Even Mother Teresa, whose ministry, of course, she's passed away, but her Sisters of Charity still have important work to the poorest of the poor, the sick and the dying, is under pressure. Every Christian ministry is under pressure there in India, and they're trying to push them out. And it's hitting real people as well in the villages and in the rural areas and the cities.
Well, it's very, very concerning, and there's a lot more to talk about. We're discussing the 2019 World Watch List put out by Open Doors USA. David Curry, President and CEO, is with me. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today after this break. It's Sanctity of Human Life Month, the month we set aside each year to remember the millions of lives lost through the scourge of abortion. But even while we mourn the loss of so many babies, a new majority of pro-abortion politicians in the House of Representatives are looking to push legislation that would expand access to abortion. It's more important than ever before to fight for human life. That's why we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn funds pregnancy centers across the nation so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. When abortion minded women actually see their babies in their wombs for themselves, 80% of the time, they choose life. We want to save the lives of 250 preborn children this January, and we know it can be done, but we do need your help. For a gift of $140, 5 free ultrasounds will be offered to women in crisis pregnancies. Please call now with your gift, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at JanetMefford.com.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes The Least of These, the Graham Stain story. When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India, a journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You can't make any mistakes. They have this law for a reason.
I know. We must pray.
Based on the true story, The Least of These, the Graham Stain story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st, more information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
What would happen if conservative evangelical churches began to embrace queer theology? Do we really want to find out? Join me, Janet Mefford, at the upcoming God's Voice Conference, February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City. Find out how sexual radicals are working to undermine sound doctrine in our churches and how to stand on God's word at this critical time. Come stand with us at the God's Voice Conference. Register now at godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. We'll see you there. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. A very sobering statistic to consider that 245 million Christians now experience high, very high, or extreme persecution around the world. That is almost the population of the United States. That's a huge number of our brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ across the globe. And we are talking with David Curry, President and CEO of Open Doors USA. They are out with their 2019 World Watch List, and we're discussing some of the hotspots for persecution. Now, this is sort of interesting to me, David. You guys had pointed out that the Russian Federation and Morocco are both newcomers to this year's list. Can you tell us what's going on in those locations?
Well, Morocco is a Muslim country, but people have been relatively free. There's not a whole lot of Christians there, but we have seen an increase in the Islamic pressure in Morocco. Russia is a little more complicated situation. You have the close relationship between the government and the Orthodox Church. Yes. They've passed some laws in the last 18 months that suggest that they may limit the freedoms of other denominations. That's a concern. That's one of the things we're always looking at, is what are the laws and the rules that that either restrict or help freedom of religious expression.
Right.
But primarily why it's jumped up from 54 on our list to 41 is the fact that they've had some attacks on churches from Islamic extremists in the Caucasus of the Russian Federation, Dagestan, and some of these places. Churches have been bombed and people have been killed.
Yeah. Right. So again, we have the problem of Islamic oppression, which, as you mentioned, in 8 of the top 10 countries on your World Watch List, Islamic persecution is the problem, which has been the case for years. I mean, on your watch list every year.
Yeah, it's the case. The thing that keeps creeping up, though, is the spread to sub-Saharan Africa.
Hmm.
When we think of Islamic extremism, we know that there are people within Islam that want to impose their religious worldview on just about everybody if they had a chance. But we thought of the epicenters as Afghanistan, some of these places. Now there's a new epicenter, and it's in sub-Saharan Africa. You have Somalia, you have Nigeria, yeah. 3,700, over 3,700 people killed for their faith in Nigeria. And Boko Haram and the Fulani groups that are doing the killing are going crossed borders into Cameroon, other areas, Niger. It's going to be a big problem for years to come because nobody is addressing it. Certainly the Nigerian government isn't addressing it as they should.
No, Nigeria is one of the hotspots there. There has been a lot of attention, I know, given to Nigeria and the real genocide that's going on against Christians there. And that's one of the more populous African countries, as I understand, for Christians, right? Well, what is the Christian population there in Nigeria, roughly?
There's a lot of believers in Africa in general. We think there's about 110 million Christians living under extreme persecution in Africa.
Wow.
Off the top of my head, I don't know within Nigeria, but it's a big group.
Yeah.
The country is itself divided in half. The northern states are under Sharia law, just a big majority of Christians in the south. So it's like two different worlds. And it's a civil war of sorts, and the government seems to be doing a minimal amount. The president came in not too long ago with big hopes that he would bring some law and order, but he's from the Fulani tribes, which are part of the problem, and he seems not to want to address that. He seems to want to put it in a category of dispute over property and these kinds of things, but it's a radical ideology that's driving this murderous behavior.
Right. Well, when you go to the Middle East, you know, when ISIS had free reign and the height of the Syrian civil war, you know, a few years ago, it was much more in the news than it is necessarily now. Has anything gotten better in the Middle East? We had so many stories for a while about Christians and Christianity being eradicated in Afghanistan and other spots there in the Middle East. But what's the situation now? Is it any better? Is it getting worse?
Well, I think it's getting better. It's dropping. Syria and Iraq have dropped on the list, if only because other places have gotten more difficult, but also because we have to be clear that ISIS not having territorial dominance is critically important.
Yes.
You also have the factor that a lot of Christians have left. So there's fewer of them in the area to be attacked.
Right.
So it cuts both ways. A couple of good spots, though, and we have to call out the good and be thankful for it. Bahrain has dropped off the list. They're right there as a neighbor to Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
and they've dropped off the list for all the right reasons. The royal family, the government has been bringing Christians, Jews, Hindus, minority religions into the conversation about what makes a good society. And then secondly, they've created safe places. They protected the churches so people can worship. And it's been a big benefit to their society. More freedoms for everybody. You now have a woman who leads their parliament. So Bahrain is headed in the right direction, and I like to reward that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
More of a mixed bag is Egypt. The government's making the right noises. They're honoring Christian holidays. They're trying to create safe spaces and register, make legal a lot of churches. But it's going slow. And frankly, they have yet to really be able to figure out how to protect Christians in the rural areas in Upper Egypt to the south. So it's mixed there, but they're trying to do the right thing, I think.
Well, that is good. And I noticed that you also talked about Iraq and Malaysia, which had significant improvements compared to last year. So that's also something a little bit positive.
Yes, absolutely. And some of those are dropping because they haven't had as many incidents or because more incidents were happening elsewhere.
Yeah.
Malaysia is one of those countries that is a mystery. There's a lot of extremism coming out of Malaysia. They seem to want to pass laws that restrict freedoms. But we have seen a drop in incidents, and we'll be thankful for it.
Right. Well, you know, there's so much discussion, I know, about the rising soft persecution, if you want to term it that way, in the West in terms of laws that are curtailing freedoms for Christians, those sorts of things. Did the West come up much at all as you were delving into the issue of persecution? Obviously, it's nowhere near like it is in Africa or North Korea. But what of the West? Was there anything going on in the West that was worthy of note?
You see attacks in some parts of Europe. Some of the camps where migrants have come in has seen some pressure on the Christian migrants within the camps. So in other words, when you have immigration from the Middle East, they seem to be bringing their persecution with them. That's a factor that we're still looking at in Germany, Sweden, and some of these areas. Not so much in the U.S. as compared to other places on the list. That's not to diminish it, though. As you say, we understand, and one of the things we look at is the rise of aggressive secularism, which seeks to push out any religious expression or to marginalize it, make it seem intolerant. So we're watching those kinds of things. It just doesn't rank in comparison to what's going on in these other places.
Sure, makes a lot of sense. You know, another persecution that came up this past year that got a lot of attention was Asia Bibi in Pakistan. And she, of course, was vindicated. She was supposed to be killed for her faith over allegedly, you know, insulting Islam. And boy, we saw those pictures of those Islamists flooding the streets of Pakistan and saying, if we get a hold of her, we'll kill her. And then there were some issues with her getting asylum. But Pakistan, do you think that her release from prison has any bearing whatsoever on the future for Sharia law and blasphemy law in Pakistan? What's the situation there?
I don't think so. I do think that the ruling from the Supreme Court was spot on, and they wisely used portions, quoting from portions of the Quran as proofs for their case. So there's a case to be made even within Islam for why they think that this is bad law, if you were to even need to use that basis. But what you see in Pakistan is pressure, public pressure, to let Asia Bibi go and give her a just trial. They still haven't let her out of the country. And another way to look at it is what's happened with the Christians who were killed a couple of years ago by a mob violence because of this blasphemy law. Two believers, unfortunately, thrown into a brick kiln, brutally murdered. And the 20 people who were part of that in the last couple of weeks were basically acquitted and let go. So while the world is looking somewhere else, Pakistan is not dealing with their blasphemy law. They're not dealing with their justice issues as far as attacks against Christians. And that's why they're number 5 on the world watch list.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you mentioned that both Pakistan and Nigeria had the most violence recorded against Christians. So we need to be aware of that. And I think it's very disconcerting for American Christians to hear about this, because there tends to be this frustration. Well, what can I do except pray? But how would you advise American Christians to pray for our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted in this way, wherever they are?
Well, you and I both know prayer makes a huge difference. And if we did have American believers praying all across this country, every church, every Sunday, I think we'd see a different world for sure.
Yeah.
But I think we also need to let our voices be heard in other ways, so that we're not silently sort of sitting by while our brothers and sisters are persecuted. There are stories, videos, the people behind the numbers on our website, opendoorsusa.org, so that people can find out what's really happening. And then I think the prayers are going to come alive in a different way. When you're praying for just a region or a country, sometimes God stirs us in that way. But I think it's important to know, who are these folks? That's one of the powerful things about Asia Bibi. When people understood this woman, her mother, maybe a little uneducated, we don't understand her world in Pakistan, but she's a sister in Christ who was unjustly put in prison with a death sentence because she was a follower of Jesus.
Absolutely.
And it helped us to understand and to care.
For sure. Check out opendoorsusa.org to look at the World Watch List. David Curry with us. David, thank you so much for what you do. It was great to have you here.
Well, thank you, Janet.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll be back right after this. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmefford.com. We're back on Janet Meffer Today, and some good news from a new survey conducted by Operation Rescue. The number of abortion clinics in the U.S. continued to decline last year, following a trend that has seen a decrease of 159 abortion facilities since 2012. The upshot is that last year, 40 abortion facilities closed or no longer qualify as abortion clinics, and they've revealed significant shifts in how abortions are being done and how late into pregnancy abortion clinics are willing to do them. We're going to get some details now from Cheryl Sullinger, Senior Vice President of Operation Rescue. Cheryl, how are you?
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, tell us what you discovered about this decline in abortion clinics last year, because this is great news, I think, for every pro-lifer.
Well, abortion clinics in America are decreasing. They have been decreasing for a number of years now. And last year, there were seven fewer total abortion clinics in America than there were the year before. So that may not seem like a lot, but there's a lot of moving gears in this, you might say, in analyzing abortion clinics in our country. There's a lot of shifting from those that provide only medication abortions, the abortion pill, and the surgical abortions. They kind of go back and forth, and so we keep track in each category so that we can track the trends in how the abortion pill is being used in our country and how surgical abortions are being done. And so what we are really seeing is an overall decline. It's been declining for many years now, and we expect it to continue to decline. But the really good news in that is when we compare it to CDC data, we can see that there is a direct correlation between the number of abortion clinics there are in our country and the number of abortions that take place. The fewer abortion clinics, the fewer the abortions, and that is good news. So when abortion clinics close, that means lives are being saved.
That's right. So now when you say that 40 abortion facilities closed last year or no longer qualify as abortion clinics, what are you specifically talking about? Because you did make that distinction between surgical abortion facilities and medical abortion facilities, but can you explain a little bit about how you no longer qualify as an abortion clinic and some of the nuance there?
Well, some clinics actually halt abortion services, but they remain open. So if a facility is still open, but they've just dropped their abortion services, they no longer do that, then we don't consider them an abortion clinic anymore. They may have been an abortion clinic when they were doing abortions, but now that they've stopped, they don't qualify as an abortion clinic. But they're not closed, technically. They're still operating. Do you see?
Yes.
So we had to come up with some sort of a way to make that determination. You know, the doors are not shut,
right?
But the babies are not dying. So
got it. So what? Yeah. So Cheryl, what would be the ratio of surgical abortion clinics now in America? The number of surgical abortion clinics versus the number of medical abortion clinics?
Well, in America right now, we have 467 surgical abortion clinics and 230. Medication abortion clinics. And so what we see is there are still more surgical clinics by far than there are medical clinics. And, you know, there's been the thinking that the medical or medication abortion clinics are taking over. They are occupying a larger piece of an ever-shrinking piece of pie, you might say.
Right.
But still, surgical abortion clinics remain dominant in our country.
Right.
So we'd like to see them both closed. But the thing about medication clinics or the medical clinics is they tend to be primarily run by Planned Parenthood. And we found that they are really low volume clinics. Some of them might only be open, you know, 2 days a month to prescribe abortion pills. Some maybe 1 day a week. And so they're not the high volume that the surgical abortion clinics are. Women are still opting for surgical abortions over the medical abortions by a pretty large margin.
That's interesting. What were some of the notable closures? Because I know this is something that you also included in your survey, some of the most notable abortion clinics that were shuttered in 2018. What stands out for you in terms of the clinics that actually went down?
Well, one of my favorites was the Epoch Clinic in Orlando, Florida. It was operated by an abortionist named James Scott Pendergraf. I actually had filed a complaint against him because he had been arrested in South Carolina a few years ago, not too many, about 3 or 4 years ago, for conducting illegal abortions out of the back of his van and dishing out narcotics to people. You know, he was selling drugs. He was acting as a drug dealer and doing these illegal abortions out of the back of his van. Really pretty scary stuff. And so he was actually convicted of felonies in that whole situation. And I had filed a complaint against him with the medical board, who has revoked his medical license now based on the fact that he is a convicted felon. And so as a result, he's had to reorganize. He's actually gone into the medicinal marijuana business in some of his clinics. And but this Epoch clinic is no longer doing abortions, and we're really happy about that.
Good for you, Cheryl. Way to go. I'm sorry, but I got a little hung up on he was doing abortions out of the back of his van. What woman would submit to abortion in the back of a van, much less in a clinic? I mean, what in the world is that all about?
You know, I don't know. But it's so frightening to me, but I suspect that he may have been giving abortions to women who were trafficked. Or he may have been giving abortions to women who are drug addicts.
Maybe, right. Oh, I don't want to think about that, but I'm glad that that clinic closed. So while you say the abortion cartel wants to expand, especially with the medication abortion way of doing abortions, there is a lot of pushback, obviously, through pro-life activism like that of Operation Rescue. There's been a lot of passage of laws, which Planned Parenthood is very upset about. And as you mentioned, their own bad behavior. So what is your overall assessment of the direction of the abortion industry? Because there was at one time more than 2,000 abortion clinics in America, and those numbers keep on dropping, which is wonderful to hear.
You know, the abortion industry is a failing industry. It's an industry that is that cannot sustain itself with ever decreasing demand for the product that they sell. And, you know, I kind of hate to put it in terms like that because it kind of diminishes the humanity of the children for being killed at these places. And we don't forget that even for 1 second. But we also don't forget that abortion is a business, and it works like any other business. As long as there's a demand, then there'll be people who are going to be willing to supply that demand. Abortion is no different. And so what we're seeing is a falling demand for abortion. Women are finding other ways to cope with the challenges that they face in life. Rather than going to the abortion clinic, they're saving the lives of their children, and that is really good news. And I credit that primarily to education of pro-life groups and the advancement of ultrasound technology that allows pregnant women to get a really good look at their babies in the womb. Yes. And it used to be years ago, before the ultrasound, or when ultrasounds were just very experimental, people used to say if there was a window in the womb, abortion would end. Well, now through ultrasounds, we do have a window to the womb. And abortions are dropping every year, and that's very encouraging to see. But a lot of it really has to do with pro-lifers who are active outside the abortion clinic. They're saving babies' lives, taking the money out of the pockets of the abortionists. And the pro-lifers who are pushing pro-life laws that abortion clinics cannot or will not comply with. And so with all of those things together, we're seeing a drop, and we're seeing lives saved. And we think this trend will continue into the future.
Well, I hope so. Cheryl Sullinger from Operation Rescue, and you can find out more at their website and read some of the details of the survey that they've just done, a two-part survey done by Cheryl at operationrescue.org. Thanks, Cheryl. And we'll be back right after this on Janet Meffer Today. How much is one life worth? Most of us would say life is priceless, and we'd be right. After all, what is the value of someone created in the image of God? That's why during this Sanctity of Human Life Month, we're asking Janet Meffer Today listeners, just like you, to help us save 250 babies through the ministry of Preborn. How does Preborn save babies? Through ultrasounds. Preborn works with hundreds of pro-life pregnancy centers across America, providing free ultrasounds for women in crisis pregnancies. And 80% of the time, when a mother sees her little baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life. It's that easy. That's why right now, and especially this month, as we ramp up our efforts to stand for life, we need your help to support the vital work of Preborn in saving human lives. For your gift of $28, you can provide a free ultrasound to a mom in a crisis pregnancy. And for a gift of $140, you can provide 5 ultrasounds to 5 mothers. All you have to do is call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Through the work of Preborn, the lives of more than 73,000 preborn babies have been saved because of ultrasound, and 28,000 women have ended up trusting in Christ as their Lord and Savior. Just think of the impact you can have on not just a baby, but that baby's mother and all the generations of their family to come. So please, if you can, help us save 250 babies this month from abortion. They need you. Again, $28 provides a free ultrasound to a mom in a crisis pregnancy, and for $140, you can provide 5 ultrasounds to 5 moms. Just call now, 855-402-BABY, 855-402-BABY, that's 855-402-2229, or online at janetmefford.com. Thank you for saving a baby's life. This hour of Janet Meffer Today is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, maybe inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie. Thanks for joining us. I just have to say, I'm not really sure if anything can shock me anymore, because every single day that I go looking or news finds me, there's something more bizarre than yesterday's news. So it's hard to say that things floor me too often. This one really kind of did floor me. And then when I got thinking about it, I thought I really shouldn't be that surprised. Again, we're living in bizarro world right now, and things are always moving along according to the gay agenda revolution. So, you know, it's not really surprising. But did you hear what happened with Google and the Daily Caller's investigation into Google? They obtained some internal documents from Google, and they found out that Google employees had a meltdown over the word family. That's right. They don't like the word family. But you know why? Do I even have to tell you why they don't like the word family? Well, I'll tell you why. Here's what they say. A Google executive sparked a fierce backlash from employees by using the word family in a weekly company-wide presentation. Many Google employees became angry that the term was used while discussing a product aimed at children because it implied that families have children. I mean, who would jump to that crazy conclusion? What, families have children? Stop! Who in the world has a family with children? They say the backlash grew large enough that a Google vice president addressed the controversy and solicited feedback on how the company could become more inclusive. So they received these documents, by the way, from an employee who wishes to remain anonymous. Can you really blame him? One employee stormed out of the March 2017 presentation after somebody continued to show awesome unicorn product features, which continually use the word family as a synonym for household with children, he explained in an internal thread. That employee posted an extended rant, which was well received by his colleagues, on why linking families to children is offensive, inappropriate, homophobic, and wrong. Because so many homosexual, quote unquote, families made up of two men or two women, they're producing children. No, they're not producing children. So you can't call them a family if they don't have children. Is this what we're really getting at here? Yes, of course it's what they're getting at here. This is what this employee wrote. Now, listen to this. This is just a case study in craziness. This is what he says. He says, this is a diminishing and disrespectful way to speak. If you mean children, say children. We have a perfectly good word for it. Family friendly, used as a synonym for kid friendly, means to me, you and yours don't count as a family unless you have children. And while kids may often be less aware of it, there are kids without families too, you know. Okay, so you can't use the word family because there are some kids who don't have families. Listen, even if you have an orphan, at one time, that orphan had a mom and a dad. What is the issue here? It's homosexuality. The use of family as a synonym, he continued, for with children has a long-standing association with deeply homophobic organizations. Oh, sure. This does not mean we should not use the word family to refer to families. Yeah, one wouldn't want to do that. But it means we must doggedly insist that family does not imply children, except it does imply children. Of course it implies children. How do you think you got here, Google employee? You had parents, both of whom were someone's children before that. And your grandparents were someone's children, and on and on and on, like the Fabergé Organics commercial from the 70s. Everybody came from a mom and a dad who had children. They don't like it, though. When you're trying to have a sexual revolution that's in an insane direction, then you have to clamp down on normalcy. And that's all this is. He goes on to say this. Even the sense suitable for the whole family, which you might think is unobjectionable, is totally wrong, too. It only works if we have advanced shared conception of what the whole family is. And that's almost always used to mean a household with two adults of opposite sex in a romantic sexual relationship with two or more of their own children. If you mean that as a synonym for suitable for all people, stop and notice the extraordinary unlikelihood of such a thought. So suitable for the whole family doesn't mean all people. It means all people in families, which either means that all those people aren't in families or something even worse. Oh, stop it. And then he ends it with, it's offensive, appropriate, inappropriate, homophobic, and wrong. Now listen to some of the other comments. One other employee wrote, using the word family in this sense bothers me, too, because the employee felt excluded by the term because she wasn't married and she didn't have any children. What, we have to redo language because you're single? That doesn't work like that. Here's another comment. It smacks of the family values agenda by the right wing, which is absolutely homophobic by its very definition. Here's another one. My family consists of me and several other trans feminine folks, some of whom I'm dating. Blech. We're all supportive of each other and eventually aspire to live together. Just because we aren't a heterosexual couple with 2.5 kids, a white picket fence, and a dog doesn't mean we're not a family. Actually, it does. It does mean you're not a family. You're dating other trans feminine folks, whatever that means. And you don't even live together. You're not a family. How, you're not related by blood and you're not married to each other. How are you a family? You know, and I love how people try to equate everything as being a family. It's the same thing that they did to the word marriage with the Obergefell decision. Marriage means one thing. It means a covenant union between a man and a woman for life. That's what marriage is. It can't be anything else. You can't make it, quote unquote, equal to include homosexuals. Yes, the Supreme Court did it, but it's invalid. And God will have the final say on it all. And we will all wait for his final word on the matter. But we all know marriage is one thing, and it's not what they're calling it. And they want everything to be equal. You know, gay men should be able to adopt children, homosexual men, homosexual women, all the rest. It's just upending everything. And I find it amazing that people will go along with this stuff. Actually, I was quite encouraged that many people who heard this story were having the same reaction I did to this. You're not a family. It's kind of like saying, and I don't mean this in a bad way whatsoever because I love dogs, but people talk about their dogs being a member of the family. Okay, yes, you love your dog. Your dog is part of your life. I have a dog. I love my dog. We all love my dog in my house. We include my dog. The dog is spoiled. We love the dog. But the dog is not one of the dependents that we list on our IRS forms on April 15th, is he? No, you can't have a tax write-off of a dog as a child. Why? Because your dog is not really part of your family. You've brought the dog in and you love him and he's included in your family. It's not the same thing. What they're really doing is they're taking things that are not part of the family and they're trying to make it a family and they're screaming at the rest of us who are normal. And I don't know how you get past this as a society without it all just eventually completely imploding. But these people are nuts. They're nuts. I know that sounds mean. I don't mean to be mean. I pray for these people, but they're nuts. They're off the rails in the head if they think that saying you're dating a bunch of trans feminine folks means that you have a valid family in the same way that a mom and a dad with two kids have a family. It's not the same thing, and we all know it. Crazy. Listen, speaking of family, I want to thank each and every one of you who have been donating to the great ministry of Preborn. We are trying to raise enough money this month to save the lives of 250 preborn babies during the Sanctity of Human Life Month. We need your help, though. We only have raised enough to save 65 through free ultrasounds that we provide for these crisis pregnancy centers across the world, across the country. And Preborn works with all these crisis pregnancy centers to provide these ultrasounds, but we need your help. $28 is all it takes to offer a free ultrasound to a woman in a crisis pregnancy center, and it changes their lives. Listen to this. This is a testimony from one of the women.
But he was like, you're not ready for another baby. And at that moment, I felt that I'm not going to be able to be a mom to this baby. So I came to the pregnancy clinic. She said, they go to heartbeat. That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
I love that. And she ended up choosing life. And you can hear the emotion in her voice. It makes me want to cry. But she's just one of the many women across America who have seen their babies born because of what Preborn is doing. So if you can give a gift of $28, you can provide a free ultrasound for women just like you heard there. The number to call is 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Again, that's 855-402-BABY. And it's so simple to call. You can also see janetmefford.com. There's a banner to click. And you can make a life come to life just by donating today. $28 will provide one free ultrasound. A gift of $140 will provide five. So whatever you can give today, we would really appreciate it. We never ask for donations for Janet Mefford today, but we do sometimes ask for your support for ministries we believe in. So let's save some lives. 855-402-BABY is the number to call. 855-402-2229. Thank you so much for your support. God bless you. We'll see you next time here on Janet Mefford Today.